It is the dry heat check. It feels so good to say that out loud. My name is Jared Cohen, joined as always by Greg Esposito. After 3 years of being on hiatus and Greg joining other podcasts and cheating on me for the last few years, and me just kind of outright jumping out of the industry, we've decided to reunite and start dating again. The Dry Heat Check with Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito, a.k.a. J. Cohen Espo. It is episode 20. Yes, we are picking up where we left off. We left off at the Tom Tupa episode number 19, which is fitting. So we're at episode 20. Greg, how the heck are you, man?
I blame you. You left. You fully left the industry, and I've held on for dear life with whatever free time I've had since then to try to still do this. So this is fully on you. Don't try to put this on me somehow that it took 3 years for us to do an additional episode of this show. But we're back, baby. We're back.
And you know, and that's fine. Yeah. If you want to put the blame on me, I can wear it. That's fine. You were nice enough to have me as a host on your son's podcast, The Solar Panel, which is still a must listen and something I tune into every week. But so that was fun. That kind of got the energy going. And then finally, we just, you know, Greg, we continue to subject ourselves to, you know, the media, even though we aren't as involved as we used to be, and, you know, talk shows and things of that nature. And there are things that just downright frustrate us. So we decided to run it back. And, you know, I'm happy we're doing so.
Well, looking at some of the people in this town, none of the ones we know well, but some of the people in this town that are getting paid to do shows, we thought, well, we certainly could do one of these for free and do it just as well. So,
yeah,
so why not bring it back? So we're here.
What we used to do is we would name the episodes, not just episode 20. We would name it after a player in Arizona sports lore that wore the number 20, but not necessarily the one that first comes to mind, Luis Gonzalez, but one that's a little bit more obscure, because at the end of the day, if you looked up Espo in the dictionary, it's obscure. So with that said, we decided that episode 20 would be known as the Josh Jackson episode, which is really fitting based on the last year or so that have, you know, basically the last 3 years that since the Suns, since we last recorded an episode, where the Suns have been for the last 3 years is a top five draft pick that's no longer on the roster. So Josh Jackson is the guy that we are naming this episode off of to re-kick off the dry heat check.
Yeah, he'll certainly someday be an extremely obscure reference in Phoenix sports history, a footnote that nobody wants to remember, but some of us will undoubtedly remember for all the wrong reasons. I'm kind of disappointed because I would have named this the Marco Milic episode, but that's just because that is one of my all-time obscure love references when it comes to the Phoenix Suns, a gentleman who's most famous for something he didn't do in the NBA, but in a foreign dunk contest where he jumped over a Honda del Sol, a green one. He was Blake Griffin before Blake Griffin, but
that's right.
So I always had a soft spot for him. Corky Calhoun, another number 20 for the Suns back in the 70s, a fun name. Garrett Seiler, Archie Goodwin, Jermaine O'Neal, a couple of the other Phoenix Suns who wore number 20, all worthy of obscurity when it comes to the Suns for sure. And really not a lot on the Cardinals side either. You had Ronald Moore in the mid 90s who wore it, Johnny Bailey in the early 90s, Lamont Reed, I don't even remember that name, and I believe there was a number 20 on the Cardinals that you have a soft spot for that has nothing to do with his time in Cardinal red.
Oh, nothing to do with it. You know, no, for most people, the first name that would come to mind would be Deion Buchanan or Damian Anderson, right? But the first name that came to mind for me was Antoine Kayson, who played, I believe, one season with the Cardinals, but of course is one of the all-time great Arizona Wildcat football players and was down in U of A while I was down there. Fantastic human being. So, you know, naturally I remember Antoine Kayson among everyone else. And oddly enough, you know who the current number 20 for the Arizona Cardinals is? Still someone that hasn't even been on the field as a number 20 is Robert Alford, is going to be missing half the season. We'll talk about the defensive woes maybe for the Cardinals and them not getting that attention at some point. But I have to, did you know this? Fun fact, Espo. Luis Gonzalez, believe it or not, is not the only Diamondback to wear the number 20. And you would think that's the case because he was there, you know, 1 or 2 years into the origin of the franchise. But the original number 20 is Jeff Supon. Member of
you could
have given
me $1 million. You could give me $1 million to guess that, and I wouldn't have got it right. So.
Right? You know, that could be, you know, tuck that one away. That could be a really good trivia question for another time. You know, maybe we'll pose it to social media to see if people actually were listening to this show, and, you know, they can get a pat on the back if they happen to be listening and answer the question right. And then you said that there was a few Coyotes that have worn the number 20.
Yeah, nobody you've heard of other than Ty Domi's father, Ty, wore it Max Domi's father, Ty Domi, wore it in the early 90s in their Winnipeg incarnation, but not a lot of famous Coyotes in number 20 either, which is weird. You mentioned it before we started recording. 20 is a pretty popular number in sports, and yet somehow Arizona has had one famous 20 and a bunch of forgettable guys to wear the number.
So how about this for something then? Do you think that there could be a correlation that the only sports franchise that has had a great number 20 is the only sports franchise that has a championship in town?
No.
No correlation.
Pure coincidence. No.
I was onto something here. So when the Suns should go and tell Devin Booker, go change the number to 20. We need you to wear 20.
Dario Saric is wearing it. He's gonna lead the Suns to the promised land. So get ready.
Get ready. All right. Well, that's Greg Esposito, as mentioned. I'm Jared Cohen. Quick, anything else on Josh Jackson? You know, I have to fall on the sword. I have to admit, the two guys that I liked the most in the NBA draft that year, which also included Jason Tatum, Markelle Fultz, De'Aaron Fox, the two players that I liked the most in that draft was Josh Jackson and De'Aaron Fox. And I remember going back and forth on who I thought the Suns should have. Should they have the, you know, possible next Sean Marion to pair with Devin Booker, or should they get a point guard, which they so drastically needed even back then? And I kept, you know, flip-flopping back and forth. Ultimately landed on Josh Jackson, thinking they could use a perimeter defender next to Devin Booker, who can be an explosive player. So I was all in and all about Josh Jackson. And then I got really excited about the notion of trading Eric Bledsoe to the Kings for that number 5 pick. Do you remember those rumors?
Unfortunately, it never materialized. Yeah. That would have been nice because you would have went 1 for 2 at least on your draft picks. Picks that year after going 0 for 2 the year before. Don't pull this ripcord. People know how much I detest the last 9 years that we've had to deal with when it comes to Suns basketball for sure.
Yeah. So Josh, wish you nothing but the best. It is a huge disappointment. I considered you a better draft pick than even Markelle Fultz, who went number 1. I was right about that one too. But geez, you know, what a tough draft that's looking right now outside of Fox. But hey, you and I dabbled into the notion of another podcast. We did 2 episodes where we thought we would just do a podcast about doing mock drafts, where we would mock random Arizona sports entities, players, things, and whoever ended up with the best or even in some cases worst group of, you know, like Arizona Cardinals quarterbacks, for example, would be the winner. We decided, you know what, maybe that's not, it doesn't kind of condone its own podcast anymore, but it certainly deserves a segment within the dry heat check. So before we get into that, though, you have a gripe with the Arizona Cardinals. As we are, here it is, the week 1, Detroit Lions coming to town. The Kyler Murray era is about to begin, along with the Cliff Kingsbury era. You could call it the potential final chapter of the Steve Keim era if this all falls apart, because he is for sure gone if this doesn't work in his favor. But you're not paying attention to that. You are paying attention to something different as it comes to the Arizona Cardinals that you just need to get off your chest.
Well, it drives me nuts. You look at this, they're the talk of football. All eyes are on the Cardinals, and they are wearing the worst uniforms in the NFL, hands down. Nike inherited these uniforms, I believe, or I know from previous apparel providers. I actually think Reebok was the original one with this design. The Cardinals have had it for well over a decade and a half, I believe, now. And I just think they're some of the least imaginative, least interesting uniforms in the sport. And you got Kyler Murray, one of the hottest assets in football. You've got Cliff Kingsbury, who supposedly, has this revolutionary offense, and you're putting them out there in whack uniforms. All right. Nike needs to come to the Cardinals for next season and give us a look that's worthy of a guy and a talent like Kyler Murray. If this guy takes off and becomes one of the hottest names in the NFL, you should not be wearing, people should not be buying those ugly uniforms that the team wears. I need to see something cool, something slick, something slim and just that fits this fast, sexy offense that the Cardinals are supposed to have. And these uniforms in all iterations, all the colors, all the different mixing and matching that you get just doesn't do it for me. I get it. The Cardinals are never going to go away from their white helmets because it's just a traditional thing. It's a Bidwell family thing. But give me something better in the uniforms, in the jerseys, the pants. Give me something that it just really fits what's supposed to be one of the most talked about and sexiest offenses in the NFL.
I really can appreciate and understand how you feel about the Cardinals going into the year, talking about their assets and how sexy they are. So now we know what you're thinking about at night before you go to sleep, this Cardinals team. I happen to agree with you. It's a really hot button topic amongst my group of friends, but mostly it's the helmet that always gets talked about. And you know, Kyler Murray is doing his best to make it look good with those visors and the hair and the headband. He's looking like, you know, looking like Jim McMahon with the headband or Randall Cunningham, bringing back that look. But man, the gray face mask, the white helmet, I'm with you. It's kind of lame. I don't hate the red uniform or the black one maybe as much as you do, but the white one, do you know anyone that goes out of their way to buy a Cardinals uniform recently? Like maybe not in the first few years of this iteration of the jersey, but recently, like in the last 5 years, who gets the white version of the uniform? Like, no. I haven't seen anyone. I mean, I went out when they've got these new uniforms. I was in college and I went out and bought multiple versions. I went out and got the red one and Anquan Boldin, and I got the white one for Adrian Wilson, two of my all-time favorite Cardinals, and I needed it to be in the new version of the jersey. That was when it was new. I don't see anyone except for someone who's also wearing the jersey with cargo shorts and sandals to games that wear the white version of the jersey. No one who has any fashion sense wears the white version of the jersey because they just look bad. And I like white uniforms in football, but they just look bad. So I'm with you that, you know, if they're going to be as sexy on paper that Espo thinks they are and keeping him up at night because of how sexy they can be, they might as well look good while they're at it. So I'm with you, but I have more of a gripe with helmet than I do anything else. And I know that's not going to go away anytime soon because of the Bidwell family and how much that darn gray face masks means to them. So let's now tie this into mocking Arizona sports. And this is impromptu, Espo. I have not written anything down here. I'm going off the top of my head because I don't know how you're going to play this, but we decided impromptu, let's do a mock draft for the best Arizona sports uniforms in history. Okay. So who's going first? I'm holding up a number right now, one or two. I promise Scout's Honor, if you get it right, you can have the first pick in this draft because I know who you're going to take. So I really want the first pick, but I'm going to be fair. I'm holding the number up right now, one or two. Which is it?
Nothing makes for good podcasting like you saying you're holding up a number and me guessing. Yep. People at home are riveted. I'm going to go one here.
And you are correct. I am holding up the number one.
Okay. So what, are we going with our, how are we doing? Since this is impromptu, I don't know the rules. Are we going three through one through three? How are we doing this?
Okay, so here's what we're doing. You're going to pick, then I'm going to pick, then I'm going to pick, and then you're going to pick. It's the fantasy football season. So it's snake draft season. And you're on the clock for one, then I'll come back with two, and then you'll go with two to finish it out. And then I'll do one to close things out. It's the top three uniforms put together in Arizona sports history, and I have a feeling that the current Cardinals uniforms will not be number one.
So my first pick, I'm going to go with the purple sunburst from the Suns 90s era. That's the only thing that's fitting to go number one in this mock draft. So your pick now.
Very good. I'm going to go with the black version of the sunburst jersey, which not only was the best version of that uniform combination, but also one of the best uniforms in the history of the NBA. So I'm surprised you didn't go black first, but I know your love for purple. I knew that's where you were going to go. So I was kind of excited that you didn't go with the black ones. But that black sunburst is my favorite in the history of Arizona sports. And then, you know what? I'm really into the throwback Thursday Diamondback purple and teal uniforms that they're running back these days. I never had a problem with them back in the day. I get why they switched to Sedona red because it was more fashionable, but I always kind of liked the purple and teal. And sure enough, here we are about to be hitting the year 2020. And people are a lot more into those random, flashy, bright colors, and they're making a comeback a little bit. So I'm going to go with the sleeved purple sleeve, white pinstripe, purple vest with the purple and teal Diamondback A, the current ones that they're doing on Throwback Thursday. So the black Suns, the purple and teal Diamondbacks.
You have back-to-back picks, and you leave the second best uniform in Arizona history on the board for me to pick with the fourth pick in this. You left the Peyote Coyote, the Kachina Coyote black uniform on the board, and I'm taking that, and I've just systematically won this draft in two picks. It does not matter what I pick third. I now have the greatest uniform lineup in Valley history. So go with your third and final pick, Jake.
No, you don't have the black sunburst, though. That's where you go wrong. I think people are going to vote for mine because you went purple sunburst and not black sunburst. I'm sorry.
Black is not a Sun's official color. And if you go back and look, those purples are the ones that people really remember. They did not have the black uniform when they went on the 92-93 run. They had the white and they had the purple. And that's the greatest team outside of that Diamondbacks 2001 team in Arizona sports history, the most beloved of them all, and purple is associated with that. So I'm sorry, you're just wrong with that one.
I'll agree to disagree. Who's your next one?
No, it's your. Do I get to go back to? All right.
You're up for two to finish out your team.
All right. So this one, I'm going to go way off the board. This was a jersey worn once ever, and I still think it is one of the most iconic and random things that has ever happened in Arizona sports history, and that is the turn ahead the clock Arizona Diamondbacks jersey from the 1999 season.
Worst uniforms in history.
If you have not seen it, go Google it. It is so spectacularly bad that it is amazing, and I would love to see them bring it back at least for a night. So I'm going to go with the extremely obscure there is my final third and final pick.
Just to remember the rules for this was best uniforms, not obscure and weird. And I think whatever value you gained from getting the Kachina jersey just got completely diminished.
Nope.
So I apologize for you. And my third pick was actually going to be the Kachina uniform. So you threw me off there. I'm going to go with the old Western original Suns uniforms with the Phoenix across the name in the white, which, you know, I think, you know, the Van Arsdale, you know, the Westfall, the Connie Hawkins.
Hold on. I have to pick a bone to pick with you here. Okay. Are we talking about the original ones? Because those were not Western font. I don't believe the
Western font.
Okay. From 72, I believe, was when those came into existence. I may be off on the date, but it certainly wasn't the first iteration. That was what the Suns wore as their throwback for their 50th anniversary, which was the non-Western font version of those jerseys. So, yeah,
I got you. So maybe Van Arsdale and Hawkins didn't play with the Western font. You know, maybe you got me there. But Western font. So I guess the Hornacek, Marley, you know, those jerseys before the sunburst came out, those uniforms is my third pick. Do you have any, so let's recap this here now. You went Purple Sunburst, Coyotes Kachina, and then the ridiculously dumb throw whatever it was, turn
ahead the clock.
Turn ahead the clock, whatever those were. It was one of the most ridiculous looks in sports history. I'm going with the Black Sunburst. I've got the what was the second one I did? I can't even remember.
The Diamondbacks purple.
The Diamondbacks purple and teal, and then the Suns Western font. Do you have any honorable mentions that you want to throw out there that, you know, that would have made it to the fourth or fifth pick if we went that far?
I'm just glad to see that we've taken 3 years off and I still have to carry you with this stuff. I mean, come on, man.
Go for it.
Honorable mention. I don't know. There's something about at the time in the 90s, I wasn't a big fan, but as I look back on them, I actually really liked the Cardinals white uniforms that had the blue stripe on it and the Arizona State flag. It's weird, but those have grown on me over time. I actually like those. I'd probably put those as potentially an honorable mention. I really love the Sun's current purple. There's something about that's become very good. If we're just talking shorts, I probably would throw last year's Low Sun shorts with the purple and orange Arizona State flag on that list as well. But shorts are a whole different ball game that we could discuss another time.
So. Yeah, we can talk shorts another day. My honorable mentions were the orange PHX Suns uniforms during the Nash and Amari era.
Oh,
I love
those. The Home Depot vest.
They were great. I loved those. I also have the original Rattlers uniforms with the gold helmet and the black with the, you know, copper and teal accents. And then the U of A Lute Olson navy blue uniforms for basketball, the ones that they wore when they won a national title. Those were my honorable mentions. So I guess we're going to put this up for a vote to see who won.
I think we certainly can. We'll throw it up there. I think another honorable mention that will grow even more obscure but more interesting over time is the Arizona, I almost said Wranglers, Arizona Hotshots from the defunct 8-game AAF. Their helmets are some of the nicest, slickest helmets we've seen in the Valley, as well as if we're talking helmets, the Arizona Wranglers also a fun helmet. So we've totally gone nerdy and off the rails, which
really nerdy,
I think, is kind of the point of this show, but we've gone there. So
the reason why we even brought up, you know, doing a mock of Arizona sports, though, is we were talking Arizona Cardinals. It's week one of the NFL season. They're going to be playing the Detroit Lions. Everyone in the national media is talking about how they don't believe in Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, where they're not paying attention to how much this defense, I think, is about to get lit up by Matt Stafford and Kerryon Johnson and Kenny Golladay and the Detroit Lions. So I'm pretty concerned, you know, while everyone's freaking out about the offense and going to gauge whether the Cardinals are going to be good enough based on their offense, I'm wondering if they're going to win any games. It's going to be more determined on their defense. So we like to talk Arizona Cardinals, right? But we don't want to just do it the base level stuff that everyone does, Espo, where we break down position battles and schemes and what people need to do in order for the Cardinals to win. We like to take a different road here, and we're really excited to bring back the Nick Cage spectrum. Yes,
oh,
Nick Cage,
yes.
The incredible actor, the incredible career. We like to take a glance at the Arizona Cardinals on a week-to-week basis while comparing them to Nicolas Cage movies. That is, in my opinion, Espo, the best way to get a gauge of how we feel about the Cardinals. And to be honest, they should be game planning based on how they can compare themselves to a Nick Cage movie, because maybe they'll win more than 3 games next year. Who knows? We'll see.
Well, Nick Cage could have coached them last year, and they probably would have won more than 3 games. So I'm happy to bring this back, and I think it's only fitting as we relaunch this and the Cardinals embark on this new era that we're at the Fast Times at Ridgemont High on the Nick Cage spectrum. His very first role in film, he played an uncredited role of Brad's bud. There wasn't even a name for this dude, but it was the beginning of something special. Brad's bud. That's what is. That's what he was credited as. He didn't even have a real name in the film. It was like a 2-second cameo. But both the fact that the title has Fast in it, which is the way we know the Cardinals are going to play, and that was the start of something beautiful. That was both a roaring success and a total dumpster fire all at the same time. I think Fast Times at Ridgemont High is where we are on the Nick Cage spectrum, because I have high hopes for this offense, but I think it's, especially this season, is going to be very all over the map. You're going to see some things you really love. You're going to see some things that you go, I don't know what the hell I just watched, but I'm very confused by it, which is a very good way to describe probably 2/3 of the Nick Cage films we've yep. seen over the years as well. So that's just where we are. We're at the start of something. We just don't know quite what that something's going to turn into.
That is why it is the ultimate gauge on the Arizona Cardinals, for the exact definition that you just gave at the latter half of that explanation. And I think that is a great way to start it. It's going to be tough for me to up that one. I went with Matchstick Men, which is a movie I've seen and haven't seen in a long time, but here's why. So the NFC West kind of seems to have its identity, right? The Rams are the defending NFC champs. They played in the Super Bowl. The Seahawks are still alive and well for the Pete Carroll era, and they seem to be that way still with the addition of Jadeveon Clowney and just adding players that are in their prime and trying to remain competitive for the NFC. And then we know what the 49ers are. They continue to be a team that everyone expects to make that big leap, but probably won't. And that's been the case for them since they blew it up and brought John Lynch in as the GM, where they've had a couple nice off seasons and people had big expectations for them to be that, you know, breakout team like the Bears were last year, or the Rams were even a few years ago, but they continuously fall short. Some of that has to do with injuries. So the reason why I bring up the Matchstick Men is because Nick Cage in that movie, and I think Sam Rockwell was the name of the actor of his partner in this, they were like con artists, right? Their whole thing was being, you know, conning people into stuff to get money and to get things and whatever. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Nick Cage has a teenage daughter in the movie that comes into the fold and just totally throws everything off. It forces Nick Cage to think think again about what he's doing with his life and why he's going about it. I kind of see the Arizona Cardinals being the teenage daughter in this situation, to where we kind of know what the NFC West is for the most part, but all of a sudden here comes that teenage daughter by the name of Cliff Kingsbury and, you know, the twin teenage daughter, Kyler Murray, that are just going to come in and people just don't know, and is going to screw everything up and really mess with the identity of the NFC West. And I think people really struggle. You know, it's so opposite ends of the spectrum when you see what people are saying both nationally and locally about what they expect from this football team, where some people think it's going to take the world by storm and Kyler Murray is going to be the next Pat Mahomes. And then other people think that it's going to outright fail. And a lot of the NFL wants them to fail, so they're going to come out and give them their best every Sunday. I kind of see them as that random teenage daughter of Nick Cage that is just kind of messing with what the NFC West is supposed to look like in the 2019 season.
That's not where I thought you were going to go. I thought you were going to say, because the Cardinals have potentially two con men at the helm in Kingsbury and Murray, because we don't know who they are or what they'll be. So I thought might be the way you went as well. But
probably
I think
a better
two
way to go about it. Thanks for putting me on blast.
I think there's two very very solid examples of the Nick Cage spectrum that we went with here.
Yeah, I love it. So the Nick Cage spectrum, it's brought in back. We brought it back. It is going to be the way to judge the Cardinals on a week-to-week basis. We'll run it back after they play the Detroit Lions, and you really aren't going to get better Arizona Cardinals coverage in 2019 from anywhere else, because they are not basing it off of the Nick Cage spectrum. So,
patent pending.
And I'm sure there's going to be some t-shirts and a line of clothing wear out there that Espo's going to throw together as a result, because that is his, you know, his third passion outside of his kid, his podcasting, and then making random Arizona sports apparel. So keep an eye out for that. I'm giving you the heads up now.
Just wait for the Basin Boys that I think we should be referred to as well. We'll get some Basin Boys merchandise out
Basin
there.
Basin Boys.
As well.
Love it. Love it. As we move along, and we're moving quickly here, Espo, the next benchmark that we're introducing, you know, the Nick Cage Spectrum is old. The Mocking Arizona Sports is new for this podcast, but, you know, an older segment that we've done together. But this one is new. And I'm really excited about this, mostly because I know you, and you're going to have some gems with this segment over the course of the, you know, next however long we do this podcast, whether it's another 19 episodes or whether it's until we're in our 60s and people are like, can you guys just shut these people up? But basically, the New York Post is famous for their headlines and famous for the, you know, the, like, alliterations or funny taglines or whatever they do. To call, you know, the headings or the headlines for their articles, right? The other person that's great at it is Eric Sorensen, friend of ours, who comes up with just brilliant ways to bring in an article headline to kick things off. The one thing I don't know about you, I think we agree that we hate most about the media industry right now is just clickbait stuff. And the best part about our society right now is people are putting clickbaiters on blast these days. It's really fun to watch, because back when we were doing this on a daily basis, you know, when you were with the Suns and I was with Sports 360 and then also beyond, we hated the clickbait articles, but it still seemed to catch everybody. Now those people are being put on blast by Twitter, where the rest of us can just sit back with our arms crossed and have fun with it. So we're going to take this, you know, benchmark section of our show moving forward and call it, instead of, you know, headlines or newspaper headlines of what the titles would be, which is an ancient radio segment, we're taking it to another level and we're calling it clickbait headlines, where we take stories from the last week, month, year, whatever, that are prevalent to us, and we give it a clickbait headline, not necessarily to be proud of the clickbait articles, more to make fun of the ridiculous nature of how people can turn these stories and try to make it a clickbait article. So I'm excited about this one. And you know what? Since you got to go first on the Cage Spectrum, I'm going to go first with this one. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, please, please do. Seeing as you know what we're actually going to talk about, it's only fair that you you to go first here.
So. That I go first. Okay. Do you have anything else you want to weigh in about your thoughts on clickbaiting in general?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. It sucks. So,
yeah, it sucks.
So let's have some fun creating headlines that somebody could use out there to try to fool people into reading something.
Perfect. I'm going to go with a recent article put up by Evan Sidery about, he now works for Forbes covering the Phoenix Suns, a fan of his work. He did an article about Ricky Rubio, who's prevalent right now playing for the world championships for Spain. And he's playing really well. And he did an interesting piece about Ricky Rubio and how he could be the perfect match for the Suns. In fact, his article title was Setting the Pace, Why Ricky Rubio and the Suns Could Be a Perfect Match. I think he dropped the ball on what could have been a perfect clickbait article for his article that probably would have made people not click on it. So good for him for not doing it. But if he wanted to go this route, the article should have been titled Steve Nash Returning to the Suns? Question mark.
Ooh. I like that. I can see that. So hold on. So the way this game's played is I can pick any article and then I just change it to a clickbait headline, right?
That, or you can do what, say you're doing a recap of, you know, the Cardinals' fourth preseason game and you're making your own article. It doesn't have to be based on someone else's article, and you create your headline based on that. I went the route of taking someone else's article and making it into a clickbait headline, but you can basically go back and say, you know, something about the Cardinals or a game or something else that you find tickles your fancy.
I think I will go with, I'll go off the board. I'll go with a story that wasn't written, but one that I saw talked about. Kyler Murray was at the Oklahoma game on Sunday night, with the first practice of the season being Monday. I'm trying to figure out why, you know, this was definitely something that was just rife for clickbait. And you could say, Kyler Murray returns to Oklahoma, turns back on Cardinals. I think that's the way I would have went with this, because people, there were a few writers in town that on social media were acting as if it was a big deal that he was at the Oklahoma game on Sunday evening with practice being Monday, where they forget, you know, there's things called planes that rich people can get that fly overnight.
And no way.
That he was going to have no problem to get back in time for practice. And I'm pretty sure he talked to Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals about it before he decided to go to Oklahoma to watch his college football team play. So yeah, I think I'd go with Murray returns to Oklahoma, turns back on Cardinals.
Interesting. Interesting. I like that one. I think you're in the right place. I found it interesting seeing that notion being thrown out on social media again by certain people that are just trying to stir the pot, right? They're just trying to just make something interesting. But once again, you know, people on Twitter are getting smart. I'm not one that condones of just blasting people in the media all the time for takes that they have or posts that they make. You know, they're just doing their job. You know, they're just trying to keep things prevalent. But when you make these outlandish claims or try to stir the pot when there's really no reason to stir it, it does get a little ridiculous. So I think your title right there is perfect. Do you have another one? Do you want to do before we move on?
I think we do a slow burn with this. We don't have to dive fully into the deep end of the pool in episode one. Let's keep the people wanting more.
Them wanting more. Okay.
Yeah, we'll have more next week.
There will be after the Cardinals and Lions game, and you know, potentially with the Diamondbacks. Right, the Diamondbacks mm-hmm. are still alive in this thing somehow. I want to bring this up, you know, because this is going to be a staple on our. On our podcast is, you know, the club that you're just not invited to, and that's the group text. We're bringing back the group text.
I mean, I've only been begging to be a part of this for 3 years, 3.5 years, and no invite to this group text. You'll send me screenshots of what you guys are talking about. You'll ask my opinion on it, but I can't get the damn invite to the group text here.
Yeah, well, you know. Maybe, you know, if you do okay on this podcast and say the right things, you know, that invite could get extended, but I don't see that you doing good enough to be able to have that happen. But, you know, an interesting topic that, you know, we thought maybe some of these screenshots that I take from this thread that you can't be a part of but want to weigh in on is something that, you know, maybe we incorporate. And one thing that I posed to the group that you came up with that was an interesting conversation as we keep talking about the Cardinals. It was right after Michael Crabtree got signed. And you have to think back. Who is the best, what is it, wide receiver two or wide receiver three?
Number three wide receiver. Yeah, number
three. Wide receiver in the Larry Fitzgerald era. And it really sparked an interesting conversation because, right, Fitz is one or 1A. Kirk is, you know, wide receiver two or 1B, however you want to look at it. But it's Crabtree at wide receiver three. It sparked an interesting conversation. There hasn't been that many standout receivers that were quote unquote wide receiver three on the Cardinals roster. It's always talked about the lack of quarterback play that has been around Fitz over the years and what his stats could have been. But, you know, quite frankly, there hasn't been very many years where he hasn't had a lot of other threats around him to free him up from double teams or things of that nature, in addition to poor quarterback play. So that was one of the debates thrown to the group text that I'd love to bring up here on our episode, Josh Jackson.
Well, I think if you just said a number two wide receiver, it's obviously Anquan Boldin, who you mentioned earlier in the episode. That would certainly be the guy that you would go with. But, I mean, we're talking guys like Bryant Johnson was a number three wide receiver with the Cardinals with Larry Fitzgerald. Like there's not a lot of really talented guys. And I think if you look at overall talent and what they've accomplished in their career up to the point when they came to the Cardinals, I really think that Michael Crabtree is almost 100% the best third receiver that Fitz has ever played with. And unfortunately it comes this late in his career, because if I always look at this and go, who has had the most wasted potential on a roster in Arizona sports history? And, you know, Devin Booker could wind up on that list very easily as we go along this, but Larry Fitzgerald is certainly one. Paul Goldschmidt is another guy who had, who it feels like a lot of his prime years were wasted on rosters that just weren't good enough around him. And it's unfortunate. And I think this is in part the wide receivers in part are why Larry Fitzgerald hasn't had as many winning seasons as you'd like. I think Steve Breston's probably the other number three receiver that you could look at and go, well, he had an all right run here, but I think Crabtree's probably the top of those number three guys he's played with.
You're right. And Steve Breston was the name I was going to bring up. He did have that 1,000-yard season with Bolden and Fitz. The only other guy that's worth mentioning was, you know, John Brown was a wide receiver three because Michael Floyd was considered number two. He had a breakout rookie season and played pretty well in year two and then had that really weird stretch of health issues that led to him and Bruce Arians having a terrible relationship and him being gone and talking crap about the Cardinals upon departure. So John Brown is probably the other wide receiver three in the Fitz era. But that's the thing. 17 years of Fitz, right? This is year 17. And we can name two guys in his whole career that would be a bona fide, you know, credible third wide receiver in a receiver core that either had a good season or at least a threat or at least a name of note to put into the receiver room. I think I really give, you know, I've obviously not in a podcast form or on social media, but, you know, to the people I talk to about sports, I've been as harsh on Steve Keim as anyone. You know, I'm sick of him talking about looking at himself in the mirror at the end of the day. You know, I'm just sick of all that jargon and all that, you know, cliche stuff that he just loves while talking about absolutely nothing on his weekly radio segment while still saying something. So that whole shtick is just kind of driving me nuts. But I will give him credit in the sense that the receiver core for the Cardinals was just straight up trash outside of Fitz and Kirk last year. And, you know, unfortunately for Kirk, he could have flirted with 1,000 yards receiving if he didn't break his foot. But they really did a good job of revamping that core. And I'm with you that Crabtree has the potential to be the best third receiver, third option on this team that, you know, Fitz has maybe had in his career. And to your point, maybe too little too late, right? And it's the end of his career. At the end of this, Espo, stats wise, Fitz might end up being the wide receiver three on this team if you really break it down, because, you know, not that he's shown any signs of slowing down and not that he's shown any signs that he shouldn't be or can't be the focal point of an offense. I think with the type of routes that he's going to run on this team, a lot of short, intermediate screens, things like that, not as much, you know, back shoulder fades, you know, skinny posts, deep routes. I think that's going to go to Kirk, maybe a little bit to Crabtree, some of the new guys, Keyshawn Johnson and Andy Isabella. You know, and they love the kid Bird, who had a big time preseason. I think you're going to see at the end of the season that Fitz will probably end up having more of wide receiver three stats, even though he'll never be considered anything other than wide receiver one on a roster.
Well, yeah, he's the leader of that room and rightfully so, but I think you're very much right in terms of what the stats may look like in the end. It may not be all that impressive for Fitz, but if you look at it and you look at the all-time leading receivers in NFL history, and then you look at what Fitz has had to deal with in terms of quarterbacks and other receivers playing around him, I'd go out on the limb and say he's probably pretty neck and neck with Jerry Rice as the greatest, because if you'd put Fitzgerald with Montana and Steve Young, imagine the numbers that Fitz could have put up. Instead, he was playing with the Max Halls and Stoney Cases of the world for a lot of his time in this league, and surrounded by wide receivers that would have been fourth or fifth on other people's depth charts. So Fitz does not get enough respect, and he's still one of the most well-respected guys in the game.
No question. Do you have a you know, a prediction or thought before we go into our last segment of what we're going to see from the Cardinals going into the Lions, or at least what you're hoping to see?
I think we're going to see, I take the over in that game. I think it's going to be a lot of points on both sides. Just the Cardinals defense, it, as you mentioned earlier, just showed absolutely nothing in the preseason for you to believe in them. And I think the Cardinals did a great job of not really tipping their hand at all of what this offense is going to look like. So they'll be able to catch the Lions by surprise with it. I think we're in for a high scoring affair this weekend, which means the game will probably end 12-9, because I'm sitting here saying it's going to be high scoring. But that's just kind of the way looking at it and what we saw in preseason, where I think this will net out.
Boy, wouldn't that be a shock if it ends up being 12-9. This isn't a fantasy sports podcast, and for a lot of reasons, mostly because Espo isn't good at fantasy sports.
No, I'm awful at it.
But I'm going to say this right now. If you are a fantasy sports fan and you have any Detroit Lions on your roster, this is prime sell high territory after this week. Matt Stafford is probably going to put up a big number. Kerryon Johnson at running back is going to put up a big number. The receivers and tight ends are going to put up probably big numbers. There is the potential that you're going to have guys on this team because of how bad the run defense is and how depleted the secondary is. There's a potential that these guys are going to put up big points. So if you say, oh man, the Lions are about to break out the season with this incredible offense, people that aren't paying more attention nationally like everyone is at the offense of the Cardinals and not the defense, there might be a chance to get a really good player and trade and sell high right out of the gates week one. Because if you think about it, the Lions have to face the Vikings and the Bears in their division this season. Those defenses are brutal. So take these high points that the Lions are probably going to put up this week and trade them. Maybe outside of Kerryon Johnson because he's good, but trade him right after they put up big numbers in week one. There is a tip for you right there to really capitalize and take advantage of it.
Look at that.
Espo, I know you're horrible at fantasy sports. So here, you know, go pick up Detroit Lions in any league that you're in and go trade them. That's my tip for you. So maybe you'll actually be good this season.
I'm just going to farm out my my management to you. I'll be the owner. You can be the general manager. And then inevitably in a few years, I'll fire you because we don't win a championship in very, very Arizona sports fashion. So.
Are you going to fire me by putting goats in my office?
I will have goats come crap in your office, yes.
Perfect. That's the way I want to go out. That's the way I want to go out. The we're going to do this each and every week to close out the dry heat check episode. And we're going to switch gears, talk dad talk. The last time we did this podcast, Espo, you were not a father yet. And now you are.
I had just become a father when we did the final episode.
Oh, is that okay? That okay. So then you were still in the infant phase. Which
I was
is
in shock still. I was literally 2.5 weeks, I believe, into fatherhood when
you were surprised you were awake for that last episode, right?
I hadn't slept in 2 weeks, so I think I went to bed for the first time right after that. So.
Because you're exhausted from talking to me. I get that.
Exactly. You bored me to death. So
That happens. So basically what we're going to do is, you know, we're dads, you know, we're just dads living in Phoenix in 110 degree heat, trying to have a sports team that's worth a damn. You know, we don't really ask for much. We just are looking for that, you know, that escape, if you will. There's always something weird that happens in the world of being a dad. And we'll choose to focus on that in our final, you know, segment of every show.
And I have a question for you this week in this, the way I want to go with this, because you've been a dad a little longer than me. And don't worry, this isn't some weird birds and the bees or anything awkward like that. This is a simple question. I struggle as a father whether I should be raising my little girl as an Arizona sports fan or not, because I want to pass this along, but I also go, if it plays out anything like the last 30 years that I've been an Arizona sports fan, I am setting my daughter up for a lifetime of heartbreak. And I don't know if that, as a parent, is something you should actually do.
And you know what? I'm going to go right out and say that you are doing exactly what you should be doing, and that is raising them as an Arizona sports fan. And I'm not saying that because I'm a fan of those teams and I want them to go through the cruel and unusual punishment that you and I have had to go through over the last, you know, 30 plus years. But I'm telling you right now, The reason why Arizona sports fans have the stigma that we do is because no one is from here other than you and me. We're the few, the proud. The Phoenicians, born and bred. There's not a lot of us out there. We're just coming into our primes as adults, but most people aren't even from here. There's going to be an era of kids over the last 10 years that aren't going to be fans of the sport or fans of the local teams because they've all stunk. Other than the Cardinals for a small Bruce Arians phase, the Diamondbacks have been in the playoffs like what, once in the last in the maybe twice in the 2010s. Mm-hmm. Suns obviously speaks for themselves. The Coyotes haven't made the playoffs. Or no, they made the playoffs once, I believe, in the 2010s, or I could be wrong.
Yep. Yeah, they made the run to the Western Conference.
Which was a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. There's that missing era. There's the era that of everyone before them in the last 10 years that has not from here. We've got to usher in these youngsters right now to just believe that one or two of these teams are going to become perennial powers.
Yeah, and, but that's the sucker's bet. It's the same sucker's bet we've made for 30 years. What I struggle with.
And I get your struggle, but they could potentially be the only ones that are going to make the Phoenix sports fan be compared to the New York or Philly or Boston sports fan to where they just, it is life. And you don't root for teams outside of your region.
I feel like this is my potential. This is my training wheels for setting up my, dealing with my daughter, bringing home potential suitors later in life. And I'm like, right now I look at this, I go 50-50 that this person's good for in the long run, you know, and I get it. I should guide her that way. We should want that. But I feel like I'm potentially putting her in the path of something that is going to break her heart repeatedly, and that's a difficult pill to swallow.
Yeah, I can appreciate your reluctancy, but at the end of the day, we need to foster in the future to be wired correctly and support where they're from and support their local teams. I'm passionate about it because I get embarrassed sometimes how our fan base is currently. Some of it is warranted because the teams have been crappy, but at the end of the day, I have a Phoenix Suns pop socket on my phone because I can't quit. And
I can't quit you.
So my dad talk, and this will be something maybe that you'll look towards when you start to bring in, you know, multiple kids, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Espo going for number two, right? I mean, you guys are probably having that conversation if it hasn't, you know, been in the works already or something I don't know about, or maybe you don't want to talk about it here on this show. I get it. But it could
I'm
happen.
Far too old for number two. I'm 36. Like, I'm far
young,
too old.
Man.
No.
You're young. This is what I found interesting, and that other fellow listeners who have multiple kids will find that every kid is so different. You think you master something in round one, and then round two comes and it's completely different. You have to alter the way you discipline or the way you praise or the way they eat. It's just crazy.
Yeah, but I'm afraid I'll be the Ryan McDonough of this. And my first go around that first year is spectacular. And then I crap the bed the rest of the time. And that's just terrifying for me when it comes to children, you know?
Well, and here's where you're probably going to be better than McD is you are probably going to learn where you're struggling and adapt to it instead of sticking to the thing that is not working. That's probably where I trust that you'll be better at it. This is what I want to talk about that I find fascinating, though, in my dad talk, is I have three kids now, and one of them has come since our last episode. I got my first boy, so I have two girls and a boy, and it's interesting because the girls cried when they were upset or they wanted something. What my son does, because one, he sees, you know, us yelling at each other from time to time, but the other thing, it's the way he knows to get attention isn't always from crying. It's from just straight up screaming at the top of his lungs. That is the way that he decides, you know what? As a two-year-old, this is how I get attention. I want something. I want my older sister to give me her blanket because even though it's hers, I need to be the one that's holding it. So I'm just going to stand in the middle of the room and just straight up scream, like yelling, like right after Amari Stoudemire dunks the ball and screams at the top of his lungs. That is what my son does when he wants something. So gone are the days of, you know, they need to cry or let them cry, or if they're crying, you have to see what they're doing. No, my son just skips the crying phase to just yelling at you at the top of his lungs to make sure that you know that he's not happy. Both of my girls didn't do that. And I tell you, man, it is one of the most annoying sounds on the face of the earth.
I feel like he may have inadvertently went back and listened to some of our old podcasts and learned that that's just the form of communication, is raising your voice really loud to get your point across. So I feel sorry for you. My daughter is not in that camp, but she's in the, she's already figured out how to outsmart me camp at two and a half years old. So that's where I'm at. It's like I'm dealing with a much more seasoned general manager somehow, even though she's younger than me. So
he's also smarter than you, so you should just be used to it and embrace it, right?
Well, you know, it's not that tough to outsmart me. I think if you followed me online, you know that. If it's Batman or Arizona sports, you have no chance against me. Everything else is free game. So
you brought up Batman, not me. What do you think of the Joker trailers with Joaquin Phoenix?
Oh, I can't get over it. I've watched that thing so many times. I am so ready for that film. So we will certainly talk about that, even though it has nothing to do with Arizona sports, once I get to see that film. So
Espo, now that we're back, where can people find our shows or get in touch with us or follow us along the way?
I have no clue, so just figure it out. No, you can find the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. It's not iTunes anymore. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you decide that you enjoy finding fine podcasts, you can find the show Dry Heat Check. Check it out. You can go to dryheatcheck.com. I think we own that. And
we have
that
a website? I didn't know that.
I believe so. I got to go make sure that I have the settings correct. You can go on Instagram, the Dry Heat Check, and then Twitter, I believe, Dry Heat Check, at Dry Heat Check. You can find us in all those places as we get these things back up and running. We dust them off and we figure out how to use them again. But we will we'll be here for you, at least until we get bored with this or one of us has work obligations that no longer makes this possible. So.
And while you're at it, if you're going to subscribe, you know, hopefully you do on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, please leave us a review. Let the world know that we're back and we're out to make some plays while we're at it.
Why not?
Steve Keim is saying, you know, we're back. We've got Kyler Murray and we're going to make some friggin' plays. Dry Heat Check is back.
We're always on the clock every 3 years here with the Dry Heat Check. So
leave a review. Always on the clock. Oh, we'll talk about that next week. Do you want to save that for next week?
Yes, let's save that for next week.
We'll save it for next week. Leave a review. It helps our podcast land in the laps of others and alert the media because we're back and we're coming with authority. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. It is the Dry Heat Check. This has been episode Josh Jackson. And look forward to an exciting 2019 football season and beyond with the rebirth of our show. Espo, talk to you later, man.
Always a pleasure.